This is Season 2, Episode 26 of the Language Mastery Show with Jan van der A. Here's a little sample of what's coming up.
Just get started. I think many people, and it doesn't matter if you want to learn a foreign language or if you want to start an online business, when people get started, they focus a lot on the technique, right? So if you want to learn a language, they look at, okay, is this method better? Or maybe this software is better, or this book is better. But the most important thing is actually your mindset. I really think that 80% when it comes to learning a foreign language comes to having the right mindset. Actually, and this, again, it also works for online business.
Welcome back to the Language Mastery Show. I'm your host, John Fotheringham. Today's episode, I chat with Jan van der A, a Brussels-based polyglot and entrepreneur from the Netherlands, the co-founder of the language learning site Language Boost, and the co-founder of the new business, Langpreneur, which is an event series and podcast dedicating to helping language learners, teachers, influencers, podcasters, YouTubers, etc., to turn their passion for languages into a profitable, scalable online business. Oh, and one thing real quick, there is some adult language in the interview. So if you have kids listening or you're listening on your speaker at work or something, you might want to pop in some headphones. For show notes, go to languagemastery.com/show. All right, enjoy my chat with Jan. Hey, Jan, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, it's still early here, but...
Yeah, it's early here, too. Different kind of early.
Exactly. Midnight, right?
Yeah. So, wow. Luckily, I'm a night person, so no worries at all. Yeah.
Thank you for making the time.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad it worked out. I know it's always tough to schedule these kind of things across the pond, as it were, but glad we made it work and glad we... A chance
Where
to chat.
Are you? Is this like California time zone or LA?
Yeah. I'm in Washington State, about 3 hours east of Seattle.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, and you're from the Netherlands, but you're now living elsewhere, I believe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, living in Brussels.
So Brussels, that's right.
That's like 2 hours away from my hometown. So
that's nice.
Like the distances in Europe.
I know it's such a different world. Yeah. It's funny. I remember we were living, my wife and I lived in LA for a while, and somebody, it's a family friend said, oh, you know, so-and-so lives in LA, you know, and it's like, that's literally, it's 50 miles away and it's going to take 4 hours to get there.
Yeah.
You know, even it's the same city, but then in Europe, like you can live in other countries and get there and, you know.
Yeah. You can easily like
an hour. Yeah.
Like 5 or 6 countries in one day. If
it's
you
amazing.
Want to.
I remember I was in France a couple summers ago, and I crossed over to Switzerland just for the afternoon, and I was a little bit bummed. I didn't get a stamp or anything. You know, you don't even slow down the car. You just zoom right through. So
yeah, that's exactly how it goes. Like when I go back to my hometown, it's like, oh, I'm already in the Netherlands. Like you can see it from the infrastructure. Everything is just a little bit better. But other than that. It's all quite similar. The languages change.
Sure.
Yeah.
But hey, for polyglots, that's a plus, you know?
That's a good thing, exactly.
Yeah. You get a lot of freebies.
I would say like seven and then
seven, like
three, four. Yeah. I don't know. I usually say 10 indeed. So
I know it's hard to say what you say. I mean, we could get into how we define fluency, which I know is one of those controversial topics.
Everyone has an opinion, has his own opinion on that, but I will be happy to answer that question if you want to.
Sure. In fact, I didn't go to a lot of the, you know, polyglot or gatherings or other events for a long time. I put it off because I thought I wasn't a polyglot. You know, I spoke Japanese and Mandarin and just a tiny bit of other things, and I thought, well, that's for people that, you know, that's for Richard Simcott or people that speak 15 languages and can work in 10.
Yeah.
I had that idea in my head.
Yeah. I think many people have that idea. And I actually talked about this with Richard Simcott. And he said that calling it the Polyglot Conference, he said maybe it was a mistake. People feel,
right.
They feel like they're not, you know, not one of those guys that speak 10 languages and then don't come. But I guess now it's maybe a bit more clear because so many people have been there.
It's evolving.
Yeah, not everyone speaks 10 languages, but just by judging from the name, it might sound a little bit scary to go there.
Yeah, so it goes.
Have you been to any of the events or not at all?
So I went to the Polyglot Gathering in Bratislava this last June. Okay. That was my first.
Okay.
Actually,
okay.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was good. It was good. The challenge was I actually was roommated with Chris Broholm. He helped me crash at his Airbnb because I didn't manage to get a place, and we only had one key, and so basically I would have to go out with him at night, and then I couldn't go home early. I was stuck with him, with Chris until 5 in the morning, you know, bar after bar. So that was
drinking whiskeys.
Yeah. That was intense. I learned my lesson.
yeah. Next time, don't stay.
Get my own place.
Anyway,
he's great. He's great. He's really sweet, and he's been super helpful too on the business front. Definitely, he's given me some great advice, and I've actually been encouraging him to be more of a consultant. I think he could do a lot of good. Yeah, I mean, similar to what you and Ollie are doing, I think. You know, I know he works with Ollie, but
that's true because he knows a lot of this stuff, right? Like affiliate marketing, but also like the technical, like software, email marketing. Like he's very good with this, with Kartra, like this business software, automations. Yeah, he knows, he clearly knows his stuff.
And he's interested in it. I think he's, at this point, he's already done, you know, 150 podcasts about how people learn languages. I think he's kind of, you know, more interest now and maybe expanding into more the business side of it. So, but anyway,
I think he's also coming to the realization that he can actually do it. Like more people like you, you're telling him. So I think slowly we'll start having the confidence to finally do something with it. But I think he should.
Well, me myself too. I am also starting slowly after 10 years of doing this off and on to finally realize like I can really make a go of this. I mean, it oscillates between a hobby, you know, a more of a full-time side hustle, main hustle to crap. I'm really busy with my real day job and I put it on the shelf and don't touch it for 2 years. So I've been really guilty of being inconsistent and, not doing the scary important stuff that really matters and doing a lot of the bullshit minutia that is comfortable, but doesn't move the needle.
Yeah. Well, I know exactly what you mean. I have also difficulties with that, but you have to make all these things a challenge, right? The same thing, like starting the podcast. There was an idea, like the Langpreneur podcast, for example. There was an idea that I'd be walking around with for, I don't know, a year or 2 years, and then I finally got to a point where I said, okay, now I have to do it. Yeah. I'm just going to ask everyone if they want to be interviewed, and if they don't want, then just fuck it, just go for it.
Yeah,
and
it hurts more to not do it than to do it. At that point. Yeah. Well, it's great. I mean, really well done. I've been devouring it and I've gotten a lot out of it. I mean, you know, some of it, maybe the information isn't new to me, but most people, they don't need more information. They need a kick in the ass, you know, they need to see that it can be done and that somebody no smarter than them or no more creative than them is doing the thing they want to do. So I think it's excellent. So yeah, well done. Hats off.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think with these things, it's the same with learning a language, right? Often it's only when you see someone who's actually done it that you start believing that you can do it, that you can do it yourself. And I think with this, like with this Langpreneur podcast, like we go to these events and we know many of these people who are listening to the podcast, but we do not always go that deep. For example, many people know that Oli has a blog, like in the first interview, many know Oli from his blog, but you know, they ask him if he's doing this on the side or, you know, if he's doing this as a hobby, but you know, there's a huge business behind
wanted to
go deep and to show everyone what's possible.
I mean, I've known him for years and I knew he was doing very well. I didn't realize that he had that big of a team and that he was, you know, creating that much revenue. So that's really exciting that
Quite a few people doing something similar. Oli is quite big, I think, compared to the other people that I interviewed, but there's quite a few people out there that have like multiple six-figure businesses. And I just wanted to I wanted to share that, make it available for other people so that they could actually realize, well, I can do this.
Yeah. Definitely.
And at the same time, also use the podcast as a tool to fill up our events, of course.
Of course.
Create like a community about the around the events that we are already organizing. So,
yeah. Which I think the switch to the Langpreneur, you know, the rebrand, I think was smart, because I, just as you said in your copy, I mean, you explained why you changed the name from language influencer to Langpreneur. Yeah. I thought that's really me too. I always resisted the language influencer title, because I don't consider myself a quote unquote influencer. I don't really want to be on, you know, I hear influencer, I think Instagram, and I've done some Instagram, but it's not really my scene. I'd much rather write and do podcasts and you know, that kind of thing.
There was a long discussion that I had with Ollie about that. He's that influencer. It's, I think it's close enough. I mean, it's not perfect, but how do we call the people that we want to help? Who are these people? What, you know, can we give them a name? Influencer, Ollie said, it's close enough. She'll be fine. And it's that Langpreneur.
Yeah.
And he said, and no, it's too similar to Chris Ducker's Youpreneur, which is an event that takes place here in London. And then like 2 months later or something, we got the same discussion again. And he said, yeah, actually, I do think it's a good name. Maybe we should just go for it. And the reactions were all super positive.
Yeah, so that's great.
Influencer is just one type of Langpreneur, right?
There's many.
I mean, you have like teachers and then people with the podcast like you and me and people with a blog, and not everyone is an Instagram influencer or has a huge YouTube channel. So, yeah, I think Langpreneur, I think it was a good.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to the fact you're actually creating a business, not just that you are, you know, having an audience. Right, because lots of people have audiences and they don't monetize, or they don't create a way to, you know, have that perfect Venn diagram of the thing they want to do and the thing people are willing to pay for.
It's crazy. There are so many people out there. Like, I'm not sure if you know Gabriel Gelman, who I had
on the show as well. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you had him on the show as well. So he actually organized an influencer event a few months ago in Berlin, and he did that together with Lingoda. So like Lingoda is a company, and they have like access to all these like huge influencers. So they invited all these influencers, and then Gabriel organized like talks or panel discussions where they basically talked about the business side of the business aspect of having such a big audience and monetization. And then there was like one lady in the audience, she had like 3.5 million subscribers on YouTube.
Wow.
And someone asked her like, how do you do your email marketing? And she said, email? No, I don't have a mailing list. Like, they have no idea about what could do. So, yeah, there's lots of influencers out there with millions or hundreds of thousands of subscribers and have no idea about the whole monetization thing. So, yeah, I think if they start listening to the podcast and actually start realizing the kind of gold mine they're sitting on, they could,
So, for those that haven't listened to the podcast or haven't heard about the event and the masterminds, what's sort of the elevator pitch of Langpreneur?
Langpreneur. So we help people who have a passion for languages to turn that passion into a profitable online business. That's a very short elevator pitch.
That's good. Short is good. Most people have their elevator pitch is paragraphs long and it's all corporatese, and that's good. Yeah. Short and sweet.
So these are like people who have like a language blog or have a podcast, or maybe they have a big following on Instagram. Yeah. So like more like influencer kind of guys. These are the guys who want to build a big audience, want to learn how to monetize that traffic that they get. And then we have like the teachers. So the teachers are teaching, maybe they're teaching 101 and they're very passionate about what to do, but they're having difficulty scaling their business.
Because they're just trading hours for money.
So we teach those guys how they can actually automate their business, make it more scalable. And then there's also lots of beginners out there who have language skills. They're not really sure what to do with it. So we kind of show them, inspire them what's possible in the world.
I think that third group is probably what most of the listeners listening to this episode are probably falling into. My guess is there might be a few, you know, there's some teachers as well that are, you know, tired of trading hour per you know, every hour of their life for the same amount of money and not be able to scale that. And then maybe there are a few more of the influencer types listening as well. You never know. But definitely with that third group, I think this is a really exciting, you know, whether they just listen to the podcast or do eventually attend one of the events, or really, I mean, any kind of polyglot or language gathering, seeing actual people that make a living doing this is, as we talked about earlier in the conversation, is so encouraging and so empowering.
Yeah. Most people don't know what's possible because you can't see the numbers, right? If you go to a website like Johan on the podcast from Français Authentique, it's a YouTube channel. It has like 700,000 subscribers there. Lots of website traffic, sells lots of courses. But if you go to his website, like, I mean, you don't see that it's a business. It just looks like just a website, right?
Right.
So it's hard to see. So yeah, on the podcast, they're really going deep and showing that it's actually possible. Yeah.
Have any of the folks that you've highlighted or interviewed or had speak at any of the past events, have they ever surprised you? Is there anything that they're doing that you were like,
oh, for sure.
Oh gosh, yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, so we had a lady in our mastermind group. This was in Tenerife 2 years ago during our mastermind event. Mm-hmm. And I had never heard of her. And she was very humble. And she was like, when she had her hot seat session, as we call it. So she basically got 30 minutes where she could explain a problem or a challenge that she was facing in her business. And then the rest of the group, the 10 of us, would give our best input. And she was, so she was presenting her problem like in a very humble way. And then someone asked, but how many website visitors do you have then? And she said, yeah, 2 million per month. Like, 2 million? That's crazy. I mean, she started 10 years ago. She had kind of head start, but yeah. I mean, people keep surprising.
Well, so did I, and I do not have 2 million visitors a month. Life, not even close. Yeah, that's great.
So yeah, it can be fun. Yeah, it can be lots of fun, but also the other way around. So people who have a huge audience and actually they don't have a business at all because they don't know how to monetize it.
Right.
So it is pretty like, yeah, both. In both ways,
So the live event in Berlin is coming up pretty soon. That's what's the dates again? That's March.
Yeah, that's March. I think it's 28 and 29.
28, 29. Okay, I'll throw that in the show notes.
Of March. Yeah.
And there's still tickets for that available.
Yeah, it's going to take place in Berlin, and here we're really focusing on people who want to get started or people who already have an existing business, but they're missing the traction. And yes, we're going to make it a very small event this time. So last year it was an influencer summit, there were speakers, it was a bit bigger. This year, so we basically surveyed our audience last year. We asked them what they liked the most and what parts of the event they found most valuable for them. And they said that they really liked the networking and they really liked the small, like the mastermind sessions. So this year we decided to make the event even smaller and really focus on beginners. So Olli and I, we will be helping people one-on-one, actually to find the solutions to the challenges that they are facing. There will be lots of coaching sessions that will be done by Olli. So it's really going to be a mix of small group sessions and coaching sessions. It's going to be about 50-50, but the focus is really going to be on not on the speakers, but really going to be on the participants this year.
So less of a conference and more of a workshop and mastermind. Roger.
Exactly.
That's great.
More intimate, more exclusive, more personal attention. Yeah. That's going
to be. Well, I'm going to knock on wood and hope I can get my butt over to Berlin. We'll see how it goes.
That would be cool.
See how it goes.
Yeah.
So let's switch gears a little bit. We're talking, you know, about today and what you're doing professionally, but I'd like to hear a bit more about your language learning journey yourself, your polyglot origin story.
That's where it all started.
I mean, I've read your about page. I know the story, but for those listening, what are the, you know, sort of the major events and aha moments that took you to where you are today?
Yeah. So my story. So I'd always been very bad at languages at school. And so I was like my last year in high school and had an oral English exam. And so I had to read the text. It was a simple text. Mm-hmm. And then the teacher was going to ask me questions about the story that I just read. And I read the text, but I couldn't really read it. So I just went over it and like, I said, yeah, I'm done. And then he started asking me questions. And instead of looking at him and answering, I just took another look at the duck and I went through it another time. I had no idea what he was talking about. After 5 minutes, he said, Jan, you know what? Okay, I will let you pass this exam, but please promise me that in the future, you're never going to choose a career for which English or any other language for that matter is involved, because language is just not for you. And, you know, there's lots of ways to make a career, but please don't choose anything for which languages are involved. And I said, okay. And that was basically it. And I thought, okay, languages are just not for me. So then later I went to college where I also had to, we also had English, of course. And I was one of the worst students in my class. I didn't like it. I wasn't motivated. I didn't know anyone who spoke English. I just thought it was not for me. It was not interested.
Yeah. You had no why for it.
I know why. That's it. I think that was the big thing. But I really liked traveling, and I've always been interested in like other countries, other cultures. Like when I was 10 years old, I could list like 80 countries with the capitals. I really liked that. I really liked geography. So then after high school, actually, I got the opportunity I didn't know what to do. So I took a gap year. It's very common to do that here in Europe. And
should start doing that more in the US. I think that's something I didn't do, and I wish I would have. But I hear about people doing this gap year. I'm like, I didn't even know that was a possibility. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It was if you can do it, I would recommend it. So I actually went to Costa Rica for 3 months. I just wanted to learn Spanish, and I wasn't really expecting to learn any Spanish, but I just wanted to go on adventure. I was 19 years old. I wanted to travel by myself. I just wanted to explore the world. Right, that's what you do.
Yeah.
When you're young. Well, I can still do that. So after 3 months in Costa Rica, I ended up not speaking Spanish, but I got to know a lot of international people, you know, other guys like me from other countries, from the US, Canada, also from other European countries. So I had to speak English with them, because it was the only way to communicate, right? No one speaks Dutch in Costa Rica. I don't know if you want to talk there. But, and I guess that's where my mindset or my approach towards learning languages changed, because I was like, okay, it can actually be very useful to speak another language. And for the first time, learning English made, how to say that, like it had a more like a human motivation.
Yeah. It was a means to connect with people. It wasn't just some academic subject. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's when I thought, hey, actually, it could be pretty cool to speak English very well or to speak Spanish well. So for the first time, I had this human connection with English and or with the formal language in general. And I think that changed everything. So after that year, I went back to university in the Netherlands, and I still had difficulties with English. I was still one of the worst students. But then in the second year in college, I got the opportunity to go to China as an exchange student. So again, an adventure. I went there. I just wanted to explore the world. So any excuse that I would find, I would take. So I went to China, and I took Chinese lessons for 5 months. Like after my first month in China, I met this Chinese girl. She didn't speak any English. And yeah, I just started using the Chinese words that I learned during the day, in my lessons in the class. And it worked. I saw that it worked. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to say, where are you going? I used that with her, and she responded. I was like, hey, wait, this is working. And I saw like how people changed the way they saw me, you know, because I'm this foreigner. They think, okay, he only speaks English. But once I actually took the effort of speaking their language, like they started smiling and they opened up and they were really enthusiastic. So that was, I think, the second proof that learning the local language can really change your experience in a country. And again, there was a human connection there.
Right.
So
a quick tangent there. Yeah. I just want to share. People have this idea that, especially I think with Chinese and with Japanese and with Koreans, you know, there's this, I think, myth that these are like the hardest languages in the world. I could get on a soapbox and talk about that for about an hour, why you shouldn't call a language difficult. Yeah. But anyway, that what I want to say is that those countries in particular, if you speak any of that language to them, I mean, just a few phrases, the amount of praise and excitement and joy that you receive, I think, is well worth any supposed difficulty of the language. So just a quick, vote for those that are afraid to start learning those languages. I mean, you just get so much positivity that just can help keep you going.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Well, I 100% agree. And because I always had a feeling like with English, people expect Europeans to speak English, especially Dutch people. So I was always, and you know, like the other students in my class, they were always better than me. So I always felt bad or insecure. I wasn't confident at all in English. But in China, you know, everyone.
Right, expectation zero. Yeah.
And the expectation zero. So I was not afraid to speak. And I think it was the first time in my life that I was not afraid to speak a foreign language. Mm-hmm. And I think that changed everything. And you're right, it's the same in Japan, in Korea. I also spent some time in Indonesia. Once you speak the foreign language in those countries, the local language in those countries, people really open up and have zero expectations, and you don't have to be afraid to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of that was like my breakthrough in language learning.
That's great.
So I went home from China. My Chinese was okay. I wasn't fluent, but I could communicate in Chinese. I learned a new language, and then I went to YouTube. I went to, you know, search for other people who spoke foreign languages, and then I found like the guys like Richard Simcord and Luca Lampiello and Steve Kaufman. And this was like, almost like 10 years ago. Yeah, I was in China in 2009, so this was like 10 years ago. And then I started going to all these polyglots events. I had an online translation agency which allowed me to work online, so I spent like 3 months, like half a year in Brazil, 2 months in Korea, half a year in Indonesia. I traveled the world, I did all these things, I learned even more languages. And like a language boost is kind of the place where documented this whole story, and where we also help people learning a foreign language. So that's also when I started the YouTube channel, the blog, and all these things. Yeah, I try to keep it brief, but
no, it's great.
That's how I got started all into languages. Yeah,
it is amazing how powerful, you know, you found your why, and once you had that why and you had that human connection, I mean,
that's it.
You're off
to the races. I was like, whoa, wait, if I can learn Mandarin Chinese, then I'm sure I can learn English.
Right.
And I'm also sure that I can learn Spanish because it's much easier. And French and, you know, all these, and German and all these other languages, because Chinese is not, well, technically for an English speaker, it's not an easy language, but
it's very different.
It's very different.
That's
but
what I'll
if
say.
You don't
yeah.
have to be afraid to speak a language that you can't speak. Well, I mean, that's huge. Yeah.
So easy a baby can do it. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
And exactly. They do every day.
They do every day. Yeah.
Of course, they're immersed in it 24/7. And if they say mama, then again, people are so excited and they give them all that praise and love, which, can you imagine if, as a foreign adult language learner, if people gave you that much love and attention every time you said one word, which again, to your point, they kind of do. In many places when they don't expect you to speak the language. So, So during that time, what did a typical day of language learning look like for you? And is that different now today?
Well, yeah, it's very different because, well, life has changed. And, you know, in your 20s, you do other things. And then in your 30s, most of the time. So back in the day, when I was in China, I was obviously learning Chinese every day because I was in the classroom. But if we talk about like independent language learning or learning languages by yourself, like 5 years ago, I was single. I was traveling the world. So I would learn, I would spend at least 1 or 2 hours per day on learning foreign languages. So that would be like 3 or 4 hours per week of speaking practice when I was learning languages intensively. And then another hour, like maybe half an hour of flashcards. I'm a big fan of flashcards. Mm-hmm. And then maybe
what's your favorite app for flashcards these days?
Yeah, so I know Anki is, I know it's a terrible app and it's very difficult to make your own flashcards. So at Language Boost, we provide, like we make flashcards for our students. So I just use these, I just use those. Decks, with most important vocabulary, example sentences with audio. So,
and those are Anki decks that are shared, or that's your own software?
Yeah, Yeah, we sell these. No, there's you can actually share these decks with other people. These are like Anki decks. It's not our own software. But when people buy our courses, we also give them access to those decks. Content.
Yeah, right. Pre-populated flashcards.
Great. Yeah. So I would only use flashcards in the beginning. In the beginning, though, so if you start off learning a new language, like a language boost, we are a big fan of learning the most important words first, and not just learn separate words, but actually make combination with those words, your own sentences from the very beginning. So that's what I would do if I had to learn a new language from scratch, and then basically combine that with speaking practice. And then during my online lessons, I would make notes, and then after the lessons, I revise the notes. So that's basically what I would do in the beginning. For the more advanced languages, like languages that I speak better, like Chinese or French or maybe Portuguese, I'm a big fan of using websites like Link. So basically getting a lot of input, and you can do that by Link, and do that by listening to podcasts. But I really find Link helpful because I can see what I'm hearing, basically. So you listen to a recording, and at the same time, you can see the transcript. I find that a very helpful way to improve a language that you already speak. So,
and I love that you can now import Netflix subtitles into Link. That's very, very cool. Yeah, I think a few months ago they launched this new feature. So cool. You just use the Link importer Chrome extension. And then if you have that, you're in Netflix, you just tap that once, and then the entire transcript of your show or movie gets imported into a new lesson.
Well,
yeah, it's pretty
slick.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I mean, there's many things you can do with Link. They're doing a lot of good things. I didn't like it in the beginning, but I think the first time I tried it was like 7 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. But then recently, like a few years ago, I tried it again. And I think especially for languages like Chinese, the languages are difficult to read. So I guess like Chinese, Korean, I'm not so sure, but I guess Japanese as well with all the kanji. Just very convenient. You can just click on the word and you get the translation.
Absolutely.
Right?
So, yeah,
you cannot do that with in the book. Like in a book, you have to either like scan the word and then look it up in an online dictionary, or look at a character, but then you have to know the stroke order, look it up in a dictionary.
Exactly.
It takes a lot of time.
I remember, well, when I was first learning Japanese in college, I mean, this was the late 90s, and I had literally a giant kanji dictionary, and every time I'd come across a new kanji I didn't know, I looked it up in the dictionary, and you had to look it up by either radical or stroke count. And I mean, it would just take hours to go through like one page of text. And now, it's just amazing. You can use OCR or just, write it on your phone or good times.
Technology has definitely made that much easier. Yeah. For sure.
So when life gets kind of crazy, I know you have a lot going on these days with family and with the business and everything else. So what is your bare minimum, like in a given day, if you want to make sure you get in just a little bit of language learning or input, what does that look like?
So just to give you an idea about the situation I'm in these days. So we have a 2-year-old son. We have a daughter who's on the way. My wife is due in March.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We're also building a house, which is not ready yet. And we have to move in before.
Oh, my goodness. And the Langpreneur event all around the
and
same
Langpreneur
time.
Event,
hopefully that doesn't happen the same day as the baby comes. Let's...
It's probably going to happen 1 or 2 weeks after the baby comes.
Okay.
I have already arranged everything like a long time ago just to make sure that we can handle it all. But so these days, to be honest, I'm not really learning languages actively, but I do use as many languages as possible. Like, for example, my wife is French speaking, so I hear French, like we speak French. We speak English, actually, but she speaks French with our son, so I hear French all the time. Also, like when I need to arrange things, like when I need to, when I need to go to the hospital or when I need to arrange something at the city hall here, which doesn't happen very often, actually. But like when I go out here on the streets, I actually do speak French, and then I speak Dutch with my family. So like these three languages, like I hear these all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, for example, we have a cleaning lady. She's from the Dominican Republic, and we always have a chat. You know, in Spanish, we talk a little bit before she starts her work. So that's Spanish that I speak at least once per week for like 10 or 15 minutes. And then there's languages that like Portuguese and Mandarin. Mandarin was pretty strong a few years ago, and it's actually still pretty strong. So I always feel that once you speak a language at a, like once you reach a high level, let's say a good B2 level, you don't forget it so quickly anymore.
Right.
So these are languages that I do not really forget. But yeah, I'm not, like my current lifestyle does not really allow me to learn a new language. But I managed to maintain those ones that I speak pretty well.
That's plenty. That's a lot. If your life circumstances do allow for it, what would another new language be down the road for you, you think?
I mean, I really liked, I learned Indonesian when I spent half a year in Indonesia in 2010. I would really like to pick up Indonesian again because it's just a fun language. It's quite simple.
That's what I've heard,
You can make a lot of progress lots of progress quickly. So, and I'm also, like, I got kind of interested in Farsi a few years ago. I went like through Asmiul Farsi the first few chapters, but I never really found enough time and motivation to really go deep, but that would probably be improving my Russian is also something that I would really like. It's still like this passion for languages, it will never be over, but I think you know in life you have to make priorities, and there's so many people who say like I really want to learn French, but you know, once you find out that they're actually not willing to make the time for it, you know, you just realize that it's not a priority for them. So things better to be clear about that. And that's completely fine.
Yeah.
Just like me now. No, it's just not a priority in my life, but I shouldn't complain if I don't make any progress in Russian because it's not a priority. So I think that's actually one of the, maybe the biggest mistake that people make in language learning is that they think they can just flip out of the phone, their iPhone, and play on Duolingo and then learn Russian automatically.
Right.
But no, you really have to make it a priority in your life and to build a lifestyle around that, to do something every day, right?
To practice the actual skill that you want to acquire directly. Like speaking, you got to speak. Listening, you got to listen. I think
it's just like,
I mean, Duolingo, you know, is great in as a supplement, augment, you know, on top of all of that, you know, it has its place, I think. But, you know, like the gamification, for example, is really good. And so they've engineered it to get you to keep coming back and keep hitting that dopamine button again and again and again. And so you can leverage that.
That's
totally what it is. So, but yeah, thinking that that alone or Rosetta Stone alone or any of these apps alone or just Anki, you know, doing flashcards alone, obviously is not going to be enough.
It's the same thing when building a business. And we talked about it briefly, like in the beginning of this interview, this conversation, it's like the easiest thing to do is just to focus on those tasks that are the most comfortable, right?
Yes.
So with Langpreneur, for example, I really like squeezing around with the website, you know, trying different colors you know, with design, have a nice
tweaking
logo, you tweaking,
it's like endless
tweaks, it's endless, adding another page, but actually it doesn't matter if the website, you know, you can do all the things, but it doesn't really matter if the website doesn't get any traffic.
Exactly.
So like the money is really made where you help people, right? So you have to do those podcast interviews. You have to organize live events. You have to help people. And these are often the things that are the most fun to do, but you only realize that when the job is done.
Exactly. They take effort. They take intention.
They take effort and it can be slightly uncomfortable. And it's the same thing in language learning. If you really want to make progress, it's easy to play around with Duolingo or to read a textbook. But the real progress, you only make real progress once you actually perform the skill of speaking the foreign language, like speaking practice, right?
Yep.
And that's what most people don't do because they think they can do it with Duolingo. So and that's another big mistake.
Yeah, which it's easy to fool yourself.
Yeah.
I more and more am realizing, and it's taken me 4 decades to realize this, but like everything I really really want is on the other side of discomfort and fear. Everything. Yeah. It's all on the other side of this like little fence.
Yeah.
And I can fool myself into thinking like, no, I can, if I just work really, really hard at this minutia, then it'll all add up. Or if I spend enough time in my flashcards, then it's like, no, it's a lie. It's a lie.
Yeah, it's a lie. It's a scam.
We just lie to ourselves.
Yeah, and I think in those moments, we really need to stop what we're doing and say like, hey, wait, what am I doing? And where do I want to go? And what are some of the tasks that I need to do to get to where I want to go? And then you often realize that you need to push yourself out of the comfort zone and do all those things. It's in business, it's in language learning. I think that's 100% true. That's important to indeed. To not forget.
Is there anything that you've changed your mind about in terms of language learning or even language business in the last few years or so?
Let's talk about language learning. I actually find that language learning and learning about online business or running a business, I find that they're very similar.
Yes.
We just talked about of doing the things that are not comfortable for you. I think it's the same thing. What are some of the views I've changed my mind on about in the last few years when it comes to language learning? Well, first of all, I believe that everyone can learn a foreign language. I didn't think so like when I started 10 years ago. I thought that learning a foreign language is not for me. I do think it's crucial, though, to have a strong why. But I think once you have that, I think everyone can do it. Yes, some people are going to be a bit more gifted than others. Some of them are better picking up accents. I do believe in that. I don't think that. Some people might be a bit more gifted, but I don't think that talent is required. You can do it without it. So that's definitely a big mind shift I've gone through. What else? I'm sure that are, well, also getting speaking practice. In the beginning, I just thought that I could learn a language with a book, but no, you have to go out there. Schedule those lessons on iTalki, for example, and just do it. Maybe not every single day, but at least two or three times per week if you really want to make quick progress. I think these are the biggest changes that I made in my approach towards language learning. Yeah,
love it, and completely agree on all counts. On the switching back a bit to the business side of it, if somebody is listening and they either have started or tried to start a business but haven't gotten any traction, or if they're just thinking about it, they're on the fence. What are like the three top things you'd recommend that they do to get going week?
So the first thing that I would suggest you to do right after you finish listening to this interview is actually go to langpreneur.com. We have a cheat sheet there, or like a quick guide, where we explain the seven biggest mistakes that people, that langpreneurs make who get started. So there you will find an overview. But yeah, if
I'm sure I've made all seven. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, I've made all seven. I think the biggest one is probably choosing a good niche.
Yeah.
There's so many people out there that say, I'm passionate about learning Spanish, I'm going to teach Spanish. So if you ask them, what do? I teach Spanish. Teaching Spanish is not a niche. And if you start a YouTube channel where you're going to teach people Spanish, you're going to have lots of competition. Yeah. And there's going to be lots of big brands out there that have like huge budgets that they can spend on like nice designs and like producing really good quality videos. And, these are going to be your competitors. And you're not going to win. I mean, you could still create something, that people like, because yes, you have your own personality that people might like, but it's going to be very hard to compete against those guys. So it's really crucial to choose a good niche from the beginning. So that could, for example, be teaching Spanish to British people traveling in Argentina, for example. Mm. Like, to make something very specific, you should find something that you could do better than other people. So if you are Chinese, for example, you are a Chinese student, so you're living in Portugal, you speak very good Portuguese, then teaching Chinese expats in Portugal Portuguese could be a good niche, because probably no one else is doing it. And you speak both languages, and that's something that you could potentially be better at than anyone else. That's where you have the advantage, right? So with Langpreneur, for example, it's also a combination of two things. So, the online business, the world of online business is huge. Like, there's lots of channels, lots of blogs out there that teach you how to build an online business. And then there is also lots of people out there who teach you how to learn a language. But then once you actually combine those two, you know, you ask yourself the question, but how many people are there actually out there that help people who are passionate about, who help the polyglots, or people who speak several languages, who are passionate about language learning? How many people are there out there who help those guys to build an online business?
Right.
So it's really a niche and a niche. And if I ask myself, can I potentially be the best guy out there to run something like this? Well, I'm not sure, but I have a good chance of succeeding there because I've been going to all these events. I know all these, you know, all these guys. I can ask John or Oli or I don't know anyone else to get on the podcast with me. So I think you should really ask yourself the question: what can you potentially do better than anyone else, and then just focus on that and make it something very specific. Choosing a niche, I think that's and be very clear about what you do. I mean, we've seen many people who come to our events as well, and they're very smart people most of the time, but they're not very clear about what they do. So they're basically doing a lot of random stuff. They go to a public conference, record a vlog there, and then all of a sudden there's a video about learning Swahili, and you know, a lot of random stuff.
Right.
So really finding your niche and then only focus on that. And then every time when you ask yourself the question, should I record a video on this topic or on that topic, or should I make a vlog there? No, think about, okay, who is this avatar? Who is this person that I'm going to help? And then only do those activities that are going to help that persona. So, and yeah, finding it and be very clear about who your avatar is, your custom avatar. I think these are very two very important things that most people forget. And most people have heard about it. They have heard that it's important, but for some reason, are still not doing it because they find it hard to just focus on one particular avatar.
Yeah, I think it feels limiting. It feels painful.
Yeah, exactly.
But actually, and I'm still working on that myself, on that exact thing. But the constraint that I have created and the times I have, you know, niched down a little bit, it actually is freeing. It's actually easier for me when I'm trying to think of what to write about or what content create, instead of trying to, gosh, what the heck am I going to do? It's like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
It takes the guesswork out of it, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And this is actually, you know, I've made this mistake myself as well. Like when we started with Language Boost, we said, okay, we help people to learn many languages, or we help people to learn foreign languages. And we do that for French, for Chinese, for Russian, and for all those languages that we speak and that we have learned, 20 languages. But it's so, that was a big mistake because it's so, you know, there's so many. If you do that, then you have competitors like Duolingo and Babbel, and like, you know, it's hard to compete. And yes, we have a personal brand, but there's many other personal brands out there. Of course, you have Oli with I Will Teach You a Language. You have Benny, you know, these huge guys. What does make us unique? So that's where we really started. That's really why we made the decision to only focus on beginners, and not just beginners, but really people who want to learn a new language or who want to pick up a new language from scratch. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so step number one is niching down, and step number two, have a USP, so unique selling point. So for us, that was creating a methodology, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's kind of the second step that you can. It's the second thing that you can do after you've decided who your niche is and who your customer avatar is. Really think about, okay, who is my avatar? How can I help them? And what's my unique way, or what's my unique approach? And that's a way you can create a methodology, for example. We do that. We say we teach more with less. So we only teach the most important words, for example, in the beginning. Oli has a story-based method. Mm-hmm. And you have Idausa, for example, from the mimic method. He teaches the languages through mimicking. Well, how do you pronounce that?
Mimicry.
That's a tough one. Yeah. Well, does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
These are one of the biggest mistakes that people make. Yeah. And overthinking, I think, is something else. Like, people think way too long before they actually get started.
Paralysis analysis.
What are the others doing? No, just get started. And, you know, maybe the way you start out is not the best way to continue, but the only way to find out is you actually get started and get feedback from others.
Right.
So really just get started and you know, record your first podcast episode or your first YouTube video. And yes, you're going to be bad because becoming good on camera takes time, and becoming comfortable on, you know, behind a microphone takes time as well, as you probably know. But you get better at it just by doing it over and over again. And that's the only way to become really good.
Just like with speaking the language, again, tying it right back.
Again. Yeah. So that's what I mean. There's so many similarities.
Yeah. It's a good metaphor.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Well, any final words of encouragement for either new language learners or new langpreneurs that you want to impart?
Yeah, I would say just get started. I think many people, and it doesn't matter if you want to learn a foreign language or if you want to start an online business, when people get started, they focus a lot on the technique, right? So if you want to learn a language, they look at, okay, is this method better? Or maybe this software is better, or this book is better. But the most important thing is actually your mindset. I really think that 80% Absolutely. When it comes to learning a foreign language comes to having the right mindset. Actually, and this, again, it also works for online business. First, you need to have a clear goal. You need to be motivated. You need to be motivated. You need to have a clear why. You need to believe that you can do it. You need to be consistent, you know. So I think this is the number one thing. You first need to get your mindset right. And once you actually have like that winning mindset, the technique, you know, that's only a 20%. That, you know, the technique, most people can figure out how to do things.
Right. But if they have the mindset.
If they have the mindset. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You also need the right mindset for that again.
Yeah.
But even that, some, you know, those people, from those people who find out how to do things, there's not so many people actually go out there and do it. So,
Are there any techniques or tools you found useful to get yourself into a good mindset? Or is it...
Well, that is a very good question. And that's the most tricky thing, I guess. What has really helped for me is really connecting to people who have already done it. And that's also like the purpose of why we started Langpreneur. We wanted to share the success stories in our community of the people who I personally know. So really connect to people who have already done it. Maybe you don't have the opportunity to go to these events or to go to meetups. Then just look for podcasts like this podcast, or other podcasts that help you with wherever you want to get. That's probably my number one tip for those who want to change the mindset. You really need to spend a lot of time with people who think in a different way, who think in, who have that, well, let's call it the success mindset for now. Either if you want to be successful in business or when learning a language, it takes time. It doesn't, you know, you need to do more than just reading a blog post about how to do it. You need to really get an idea.
Yeah.
Spend time with the people. You need to live it. And that takes, I think a few years to really get a good understanding. But spending time with people who have already done what you want to do, I think really, really helps. I think that's the best way to do it. You can do that with podcasts. You can do that by consuming content online. But even better, go to events, connect to people, Polyglot conferences, Langpreneur events, listening to this podcast. I think that's probably the best starting point.
Wonderful. Awesome, Jan. Well, thank you so much. Good luck with all that's going on in your life. You got a lot on your plate, so get some sleep, I hope, some of these days.
Yeah, definitely need that.
Yeah, and hope to see you in Berlin.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thank you very much for the invitation. Really pleasure to talk to you on
you
the podcast here today. And who knows? Maybe we meet each other in the land. Thank you.
I hope so. All right. Take care.
Thanks.
We'll see you soon. Thank you very much for listening to the Language Mastery Show. Again, for show notes, go to languagemastery.com/show. And if you enjoyed what you heard, I'd appreciate a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. And if you're learning Japanese, you can check out my free 7-day email course, which you can register for right on the homepage at languagemastery.com. There's a sign-in box right there at the top. All right, we'll see you next Language Mastery Monday.